Teaching is our passion. We at The Wall Street Skinny are proud to announce that we've joined the advisory board for the iConnections Funds for Teachers initiative, focused on supporting the Ron Clark Academy and its pioneering teaching methods. Through Funds for Teachers, iConnections is dedicated to empowering educators nationwide by providing access to RCA's professional development opportunities. Events are being organized in major cities throughout the year to fundraise and support this incredibly important cause. All proceeds from these events will be directly donated to the Ron Clark Academy, specifically to financially aid teachers so they can participate in RCA's groundbreaking training programs. Please click on the link in our show notes to register for an event in the city nearest you.
Hi, friends. Welcome back to The Wall Street Skinny with Kristen and Jen. This is Kristen.
I'm Jen.
And we are back for our weekly The Skinny On. What's going on this week? So there's actually a bunch we got to get into. We're going to talk the Fed. They spoke yesterday. We're going to be talking about the Paramount deal. So there's some crazy shenanigans going on with the deal out there. So we want to get into some of the weeds just because I think it's actually a really great case study to talk about some of the different things in terms of deals and classes of shares and fun stuff like that. And anything else we're going to be chatting on?
Yeah, I have like a serious bone to pick. I'm going to talk about the Fed for like 2 seconds, and then we're going to talk about bank balance sheets. So okay, that's cool. I came in with a strong agenda and a rant.
Amazing.
So prepare thyself.
Let's do it. Why don't we start with you just like go through what's going on with the Fed?
Good. Well, yeah, no, the Fed's fine. Fed was a nothing burger yesterday. Really, honestly, didn't matter. No big surprises there. Maybe they're going to slow the pace of taper a little bit, blah, blah, blah. Nobody cares, okay? Mm-hmm. There's no new information that we got out of the Fed yesterday in any material way, other than perhaps there won't be a hike this year, which kind of duh. I think the market was starting to lean towards actually pricing in a decent chance that that might happen.
Really?
And that has now been priced out. I mean, again, a non-zero chance. If you really think that all other central banks around the world are going to be easing and we're going to be hiking, I just don't think that that is the likeliest course of action. And I think the market was ascribing too high a possibility to that.
And actually, sorry, really fast, just if anybody is like not sure how you can actually calculate that, we did a whole episode where Jen walked us through how you can actually look at some of the data points and figure out what the percentage chances of different movements in the rates. So really great Fed Futures 101 episode. You can go check it out. We'll link it below.
Perfect. Okay, very smart. Yes. But what I really want to talk about is this. There was an article that came out on Bloomberg backing up 25 million steps after the global financial crisis. Many regulations were put in place to try to make the system more stable and regulate bank balance sheets. And when we think about the basic business of a bank, right, they have assets and they have liabilities. Your assets are things that you are collecting interest payments on, and your liabilities are things that you are making interest payments on. And that's like the basic business of borrowing and lending that banks are in. They have all these other ancillary businesses, trading activity, et cetera, et cetera. But they are in the business of making loans, whether that be mortgages, credit card loans, personal loans, small business loans, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So after the global financial crisis, a series of regulations have gone into place, and there is still, here we are, it is Thursday, May 2nd, 2024, and we are still formulating ways to make new requirements on how much capital these banks need to hold against different parts of their business, whether it be lending activities, whether it be trading operations, et cetera, et cetera. And so there's an international effort along those regulations, and we call that Basel for short. There's Basel 1, 2, 3, Basel Endgame. And then
what's
there's
Basel
also
Endgame
a U.S.
mean?
That's
like
just
where
the,
you want to ultimately get to? Or is it just
that's like the last final version of the regulations that they are trying to propose to go through.
Got
and
it.
There is a U.S. arm to that that is also happening concurrently. And we just saw some highlights in the news over the past 24, 48 hours that they are trying to have that final proposal by this August. And they are going to be releasing the findings that they have over the various stress tests that they've done at the banks based on what is the impact going to be to their day-to-day P&L, their operations, their ability to function as banks in their current business model if these capital requirements go into place.
Yeah.
Now, these rules are written by, they have input from the Fed, they have input from all kinds of politicians, okay? But these rules that they are proposing with Basel Endgame and with the capital requirements are basically so onerous that a lot of the banks are like, if this goes through as proposed, like we might as well just close up shop. Like and banks have started doing that. Smaller banks are exiting many businesses because of these onerous capital requirements.
Yep.
And so, listen, I understand the perspective of a layperson who says, we don't want to have another global financial crisis. We don't want to see that happen again. Okay. Totally understood. So it makes sense, theoretically, to say, well, they need to hold more capital against potential losses so that we don't have to bail out the banks again, right? Okay, that's great. Well, hang on. But you still want them to lend people money. You still want rates to be low to consumers, right? You still want people to be able to borrow credit. You still want businesses to be able to take out loans to fund themselves. You still want people to be able to borrow money to buy a house, all this stuff, right? The functioning of banks keeps those rates lower than they otherwise would be if it was the wild west of capitalism and everyone was just charging whatever rate willy-nilly and there weren't these huge institutions effectively subsidizing these rates for consumers, okay? Not to be all like, banks are great, okay, but this is one of the functions that they provide in society.
Yeah.
So what is happening, right? This is like Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park, like life finds a way.
Yes.
Banks find a way. So if you are threatening to implement these capital constraints that are going to make it so hard for them to lend money and go about their daily course of business, they are going to find ways to circumvent that regulation, not in an illegal way, but in the existing framework. These guys are really fucking smart and creative. Yeah. And so Bloomberg put out an article highlighting the fact that Barclays inked a $1.1 billion deal with Blackstone to effectively sell them a huge portfolio of their credit card assets. And Barclays will take a servicing fee, just like back in 2008, the land before time, / this happens all the time now still. But when banks want to get things off their balance sheet, they securitize them. So when banks were making lots of loans for mortgages, they were securitizing them and getting them off their balance sheet.
That was the whole idea with CDOs, CLOs. Like when I was working in CLOs, like the whole idea is that you wanted these banks lent money to businesses, right? It's a loan. It's a loan to a business. They want to have money back on their balance sheet so they can loan to other businesses. Mm-hmm. So they sell it, right, into a CLO. They package those all up and then other investors are funding it, right, buying it. Money goes back to the bank. The bank can then lend it out more. So it's like—
Exactly. And that is still happening today. That happens with mortgages. That happens with all kinds of assets that are being securitized, right?
Yeah.
But here we are saying that we're going to take this portfolio of assets that was on Barclays' balance sheet, and we're going to instead put it on Blackstone's balance sheet. And Barclays is going to collect a little fee like a mortgage servicer does.
Yeah.
And they're going to collect a little fee for servicing all those credit card payments. And Blackstone is going to have the assets. They're going to sit on Blackstone's balance sheet. Barclays is effectively borrowing Blackstone's balance sheet because they would otherwise have to hold so much capital against those loans that they've made if they stayed on their balance sheet. And this is just one little deal. This is not a new thing. Banks have been doing this already for quite some time through arrangements called synthetic risk transfers, which are abbreviated SRTs. And what that basically is banks hold the assets on their balance sheets, but they pay some outside investor some fee to share in any future losses associated with those assets, thereby lessening the capital requirements. So SRTs have been in place for some time now, but this new kind of balance sheet borrowing activity that Barclays, I think KeyCorp has done it as well, that we're seeing, that's something that to me raises the specter of, okay, listen, if the intent of these regulations is to decrease risk to the consumer, to the American public, by hamstringing the banks and saying, you need to hold all this capital, okay? Guess who cares a hell of a lot less about the American consumer than the banks? Blackstone.
Private equity.
Okay? Let me tell you something. They are not out there with a fiduciary duty to the American public. They are not out there being like, woe is me. We need to make sure that we disclose everything about where every transaction is happening. Quite the opposite, right? Mm-hmm. And so if you keep pulling on this thread, the eventual conclusion that you draw is you are going to incentivize all of the private firms out there to be these balance sheet, effectively lending operations to the banks. And there is going to be a shroud of obscurity around all of this activity that in no way, shape, or form achieves the transparency and the regulation that you intended. in the Bloomberg article that I read, they were like, it's unclear how regulators are going to react to this because what can they do, right?
Yeah.
And so I would just caution everybody when thinking about how regulations are implemented on the banks and the big bad specter of the scary bank that's doing all these dangerous things. Okay, but do you want liquidity in the market? Do you want widely available credit to the American consumer? Guess what? What did we see happen when SVB went under? It wasn't like, oh, okay, we need to watch out for things that are too big to fail. No, it just meant that more and more stuff piled into the big banks that were already too big to fail and made them even bigger, right? That's always what happens. So I'm perplexed as we head into August. I mean, again, it's Thursday, May 2nd. August is not that far away. If Basel Endgame is really going to be implemented, if we're going to see these capital requirements come out for the banks, this should, all else being equal, be a big additional boon to the private sector and makes things more complex for the American consumer trying to borrow money in a relatively high interest rate environment. So that's my rant. Yeah. Just something I'm watching and thinking about. If you guys have any feedback, I'm really curious to hear it.
I mean, look, I think in general, in so many instances, things that are put in place with good intentions always have unforeseen consequences. Like, that's just how things ultimately work. It's like, this thing should happen. Cool. You do this, then what happens down the line? There's lots of downstream effects that can happen as a result of a well-intentioned policy that then just has very bad outcomes. And again, you know, you go back to like what caused the whole financial crisis. Like, if you go back to the very beginning, part of it is that this whole idea that like anybody should be able to own a home. We want to lend lots of money to people so they can buy a home. Really, really, really good idea, right? Everyone should have a home. We don't want people to be not able to get houses. At the same time, then if you lend a lot of stuff, banks have to figure out how to get more balance sheet. You end up with these crazy CDO shit, and then obviously shit blows up. Anyway,
I'm much more cynical about the initial lending policies that were a result of government policies in the 90s under the auspices of, oh, wouldn't it be great if everybody had a home? I'm much more cynical about how that was all implemented and went down, but that's another story for another time.
Yeah. I will say it is always funny how different people can interpret things in such different ways. And again, not to get cynical, where it's like there's the whole crisis at the border and immigration. And I actually do think that most people just genuinely believe, like, they want to help people. If you see someone who's coming from another country and they need a place to live, it's like, we want to welcome you in. At the same time, then it's like, cool, that has bad consequences. But if you talk to a Republican, it's like, oh, they just want to increase their voter base. And it's like, well, I don't know. I mean, so again, it's like the intentions that people assign to things. And maybe it could be multiple things could be true at the same time, but I don't know. I'm usually less cynical is my personal.
And I'm much more cynical.
Okay, so let's actually talk about Paramount. And I guess Jen seems to think that, like, yesterday we were chatting and she was like, did you say Paramount? I don't.
Four times.
Which I don't. I think I swallow the word Paramount. But like, if I say it.
You're saying it normally now.
No, but that's how I always say it. Anyway, it doesn't matter. So let's talk a little bit about what's going on, because this deal is actually kind of crazy. Like, I could see there being a succession like drama that rolls out like on the heels of this. So big picture, most of you guys are probably familiar with Paramount. They are a huge media conglomerate. They own assets like CBS, Nickelodeon, MTV. They have streaming. They have TV. They have music studios, Paramount Pictures, right? The whole list goes on.
Dang, you just said it.
Paramount Pictures?
You said Paramount Pictures.
No, I did not.
It's on tape. I got it.
All right. Well, I'm just saying Paramount. Like, okay, whatever. It doesn't matter. So anyway, they've been in discussions about a potential sale. And there's two potential buyers out there. One is more strategic and one is a financial buyer. So the strategic discussion, and by the way, let me actually back up for a second, because when you think about the motivations for doing a deal, right, for doing an acquisition, usually when you think about the buyers, there's those two different types of buyers. The strategic buyers are doing an acquisition because they want to own something. It's part of their business plan, right? They want to, like, whatever the plan is for the company that's buying it, like, they have some strategic rationale for why they want to buy. A financial buyer, right, is a company like a private equity firm. In our case, it's Apollo, who is going to buy a company to hold it for some time period. In a perfect world, they want to fix it up. They want to grow the business, and then they want to sell it and make a huge return. Fun fact, again, if you guys have not checked out our Caesar Palace coup, like, this is the same Apollo in the series we did. So we did a three-part series. We walked through a leveraged buyout, distressed debt, bankruptcy, all that kind of fun stuff. I'm actually going to come back to that in a moment, but it's a really cool, I think, three-part series. Okay, so typically what you usually will see is that a financial buyer is your, also called like your floor valuation, because they usually are going to be paying the least amount because, again, they're trying to, as Jen likes to say, get the between the wall and the wallpaper and eke out a very high return. So you have to be able to pay less to get that higher return. That is actually not what's going on here. And the reason is actually this is quite complicated because there's this crazy corporate structure with regards to the share class. So there are two different classes of shares. They have Class A shares and Class B shares. So to give you a sense of the scale, there's 655 million shares. 41 million, so a tiny fraction, are Class A. They have voting rights. Class B do not. Now, the majority owner of those Class A voting shares is Sherry Redstone. She is the daughter of, you know, the Paramount mogul Sumner Redstone. She owns this company called National Amusements, which basically has over 1,500 cinemas all across the U.S. So multiplex cinemas, showcase cinemas. You guys have probably, I don't know if people even go to the freaking theater anymore, but like,
I don't,
that's what they own.
Yeah, no, people do. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, 31.5 million of those Class A shares are, again, owned by this National Amusements, which she is the whatever. She basically.
So basically there's one woman with a third of the voting rights for the company, effectively.
More. Yeah, more, because 31.5 million by National Amusements.
Oh, 31.5 million of the 41 million. She owns
77% of the voting stock, less than 5% of the total shares.
Yep.
And so the CEO of the strategic buyer, so it is Skydance Media, and David Ellison is the CEO. By the way, yes, that is Larry Ellison, the Oracle, you know, what, founder, I think. Was he the founder of Oracle or was he just a co-founder? Whatever. Made a shit ton of money with Oracle, his son. And so Skydance Media, they, again, are this media company that has made movies. They, you know, Top Gun, Maverick, Mission Impossible. And they are
God, I love them.
Yeah. Well, anyway, so he is in talks about doing a deal that would basically get Sherry Redstone $2 billion in cash and fuck the rest of the shareholders. So her portion of the holdings is only worth like $750 million, but she would basically get $2 billion in cash.
So they're going to pay her,
shares,
a huge premium for her shares so they can get the voting control.
Yes. So she wants this
deal. Okay, that makes sense.
She wants this deal. But again, fuck the other shareholders. Now, the other shareholders are more interested in the deal with Apollo. So Apollo has submitted an offer for doing a deal of $26 billion. I think the market cap is, so the equity value in this case would be about like $14 billion, $12 billion in the debt because they would have to buy the debt. And this is much better for the rest of all those shareholders. So the board of directors is like these independent, you know, we've talked about this before, like 12 people. They have a fiduciary duty to the shareholders. They like the Apollo deal better. Sherry Redstone likes the other deal better because it's going to make her more money. And so there's this whole shitstorm that is happening right now because they ousted the CEO on Monday. They announced earnings on Monday. The CEO is like leaving. There's new CEOs being put in place. So the point is that there's just like, there's this crazy shit going on. And it
is the new CEO loyal to whom?
It's like three.
Are the CEOs, you know, again, I'm envisioning succession. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Are they in Sherry Redstone's pocket? Do they like Apollo?
So Bob Bakish was the original CEO. And so it said moments before the company announced its first quarter earnings, Paramount issued a statement announcing Bakish's departure. The company said three of its top entertainment executives would run the firm. So Paramount Pictures CEO Brian Robbins, CBS CEO George Cheeks, and Showtime MTV Entertainment Chief Chris McCarthy. So again, I don't know where their loyalty lies, but I feel like this Bob Bakish dude was probably just like, I went out. Like, this is going to be like lawsuits up the wazoo. I mean, this is just... So anyway, that is what is going on. I know, isn't it? The other thing which is really interesting is, I mean, their share price has gone down. Like, normally what happens is whenever there is any like sniff
acquisition
of a potential
rumor,
acquisition, the share price goes up. That has not happened because, again, it's like this weird dual class share situation and the shareholders like could get screwed over. So,
Got it. So because of this risk that's known to the markets about the Sherry Redstone favorable deal going through, people
that
are like...
plus like, I mean, it's just chaos. Like you don't see the CEO of a freaking major corporation leave amid merger talks. That's just bonkers. Like that's so stupid.
But what does this mean for the last season of Yellowstone? Because I'm worried.
I think it'll be okay. But
no,
yeah.
I don't. I don't think that's ever coming out. I've given up hope.
No, I think it is. And actually, I think that's one other thing is that, like, if they were to do the Skydance deal, yeah. I do think that the idea is, I mean, look, the company would probably be sold off, like, in part. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that actually Apollo would keep it together. I mean, that's probably not going to happen either. But it's just this whole thing, the drama is very interesting. And actually, this was the other point I wanted to make, which is, so with debt in the Caesar Palace distress debt episode, we talked about how there could be, like, crazy shenanigans that goes on with debt. So, like, you mm-hmm. can have, you know, Jen, you, me, I don't know, like, five other people all get together. We've all invested in the same tranche of debt. Well, you and I could band together and be like, we're going to screw over those other people. And, like, we could go negotiate and get more money than the other people in that. That's not normally what happens with equity. Like, equity, I mean, yes, you can have the different classes of shares, but usually you can't have, like, you can't just screw everyone over. So there is,
well,
like,
who was the Nobel laureate who authored this structure where some tiny fraction of the class A shares are the only ones that have voting rights?
Well, this is not uncommon that you have some classes of shares that don't have voting rights. It's become, like, a big thing. I mean, you know, if you
but
look
that's
at-
fine. But or I guess who allowed Sherry Redstone to buy up all of those? Don't you? I mean, right?
Well, I'm guessing she just got it as part of, you know, it's like because it was her dad. It's like passed down.
Because it's a family company. Yeah. That makes sense.
It was a family thing. And yeah. That's pretty typical that a lot of times with a company, I mean, it's like you look at Snapchat, right? Eric Spiegel. He has the majority of the voting rights. Mark mm-hmm. Zuckerberg, majority of the voting rights. And then, I mean, I think, like, Blackstone stock, I don't even think you get voting rights or something crazy in the structure of the shares that are traded mm-hmm. in the public market. So there can be, like, weird,
That makes sense.
There's no set rules on, like, mm-hmm. how much voting rights you have to get if you are a equity investor. But this does obviously lead to some pretty bad incentives, shall mm-hmm. we say. So
awesome.
Anyway,
well, this was really cool. Drama. I learned a lot. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. All right, guys. Well, we've got an awesome episode coming up for you on Saturday. It is our personal finance episode, which we get more questions about personal finance that we are woefully unqualified to answer. So we're going to bring on an expert who is qualified to answer those questions.
And
she's amazing. Yeah. Her name is Katie Song. She's the chief financial planner for our friends over at Domain Money. They're a really incredible fintech startup and someone you should keep your eyes on if you're not already following them. So we're really excited for that episode and we'll catch you guys then.
Bye-bye, guys.
Bye.